I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh has been admitted to Johns Hopkins Hospital and, according to reports, is being treated there for pneumonia. Over a period of 18 years as a city council member, a state legislator, and then mayor, Ms. Pugh served on the board of the University of Maryland Medical System. A company she owns received $500,000 for books she says were intended for children in city schools and daycare centers. Others on the board also received large fees for their companies, and questions abound about how and why those contracts were awarded. Maryland Senator Jill P. Carter joins us to talk about the bill she's introduced prohibiting such contracts. Doug Donovan of the Baltimore Sun has an update on the story, and Heather Iliff of Maryland Nonprofits explains how nonprofits can avoid conflicts of interest. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us today. Plenty of news to talk about, of course. Lots of folks very, very interested in the proceedings in Washington over the weekend. The Mueller report, not yet released in its entirety, but a summary of the contents of that report released yesterday afternoon, late afternoon, by Attorney General William Barr. We'll talk about that a little later this week. Today, we're going to concentrate on a big local story. Last week, amid allegations of self-dealing by members of the board of directors of the University of Maryland Medical System, the CEO of the system, Robert Krenchik, was placed on leave of absence while the board hired an outside firm to conduct an audit of the system's contracting practices and its conflict of interest policies. Several board members have resigned, including Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh, who had served on the UMMS board for more than 18 years. Other board members who currently have business relationships with the system have also been asked to take a leave of absence from the board, and a few have resigned. By the way, Ian Duncan of the Baltimore Sun is reporting today that Mayor Pugh was admitted to Johns Hopkins Hospital last night, where she's being treated for pneumonia. When Luke Broadwater of the Sun wrote about the allegations that Mayor Pugh and others were profiting from their affiliation with the UMMS board, reaction in Annapolis was swift and unequivocal. The governor, the Senate president, Mike Miller, and the Speaker of the House, Mike Bush, all condemned the practice of awarding contracts to businesses that were connected to board members. A bill proposed by Speaker Bush is being fast-tracked through the House, and a bill proposed by Baltimore Senator Jill P. Carter is also making its way through the legislative process. Both bills aim to address conflicts of interest and financial disclosures by board members. A little later on Midday, what are best practices for nonprofit boards when it comes to ethics and disclosure policies? We'll talk about that in a bit. But first, Senator Jill P. Carter joins us on the line from Annapolis to talk about her bill. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us what's in your bill. What do you aim to achieve?
Well, first, I want to say that prayers and best wishes for Mayor Pugh in her recovery. She's not a person that's often sick, and so it's kind of, you know, alarming that she is. She runs like a motor, like 24/7. So I hope that she comes through this, you know, back to her normal self.
Indeed, and so do I.
My bill, so first I want to, if I can, talk about my bill is a little more stringent than the one offered by the speaker, but I think there's probably compromise room somewhere in the middle on a couple of the issues. One of the things, my bill would absolutely prohibit a board member from engaging in a contract that where that board member is the contractor, where it's that board member's business, or where that board member is even a subcontractor. It would just straight out prohibit that. I think the speaker's bill just simply says that it should go through the procurement, normal procurement process, and not just be sole sourced. But so his bill is a little less stringent than mine. And then my bill would have called for the board members to file the same normal ethics forms that all public figures and most other board members of public institutions file, which is with the State Ethics Commission. The speaker's bill simply allows them to continue to file their disclosures with that hospital cost oversight review board. I forget exactly the name. It's interesting, like hospital cost review board or something. But the concern about that is that they really don't publish or publicize those disclosures. and they're difficult to obtain, as I learned in the process of trying to gather information for my bill.
And your bill is specific to the University of Maryland medical system. It does not, it would not cover Johns Hopkins University or MedStar Health or even any other public institutions. Is that correct?
It would not, but of course there's definitely evidence that we need to expand to all medical facilities and institutions, given the fact that it just came out the other day that MedStar had to pay $35 million based on a court case for, you know, corruption.
Yeah, kickback scheme.
Kickbacks, yeah.
Right. And you introduced this bill a long time ago. I mean, the first reader on this bill was like the 4th of February or something. This was way before the revelations about Mayor Pugh and some of the other board members at UMMS were made public, you know, last week. So what was your motivation for introducing this bill, you know, pretty early in the session?
So yeah, there were a couple things. I was actually surprised it had got such a late hearing because I did file it, you know, relatively early. But a couple of things. First of all, I didn't have the best taste in my mouth for the UMS board, no individual in particular, but just that the UMS board is the board that decided to close the Walter P. Carter Mental Health Center, the only acute care mental health center in Baltimore City, and we desperately need greater health care and greater health care facilities. And that former Walter P. Carter Mental Health Center is now being turned into a parking lot. And so I thought that was a very poor and ill-advised decision. That's years ago. Also, the fact that I think it was last year that their story broke about the mental health patient that they had put out of the hospital in a hospital gown that was in the street. And I thought that was, you know, that just really was the optics of that were terrible. But then someone in the minority business community indicated that I should take a look at the UMMS board because there was this self-dealing, this insider dealing, and that outsiders were really not allowed to participate. And so I didn't take, I mean, I thought probably that's true, but, you know, there's a lot of problems with minorities getting fair chances at contracts anyway, everywhere. So I wasn't, it wasn't definitive, but...
And by outsider, you're talking about someone who wasn't on the board, right?
Right.
I mean, that's pretty yes. broad, isn't it? That's a lot of
so
people.
I then tried to obtain the financial disclosures forms, and that's when I learned they're not filed with the ethics board. So that was part of the impetus for the bill. And then, frankly, much of the information that I have to give all credit to Luke Broadwater that he disclosed, that he came up with, is stuff I didn't yet know. So it really is... You know, the power of media worked in the public interest this time.
And initially, at least, the medical system opposed your bill.
Yeah,
But now they say that they are in support of the bill. But they made the case initially that if this bill passes, it would make it very difficult for UMMS to attract board members to its board.
Right, which is insane, right? Because it's a volunteer board. And the board also has, I think it was when we started, 27 members. The speaker's bill actually reduces the number of members to 25. My bill didn't touch the number of members.
And were you surprised at the reaction of this? I mean, as you mentioned, you had a conversation with Luke Broadwater, who did some really good reporting about the disclosures and about the amounts of money and stuff. I mean, there's a former senator from Maryland, Frank Kelly, whose family owns an insurance business, and they do business not only with the University of Maryland Medical System, but with many of the other hospitals in the area. And he and members of his family serve on those boards as well. Has this, to your mind, you know, sort of opened up a much larger can of worms than you perhaps thought?
It started a firestorm, and I think that the legislature will not just look at UMMS board, but this is an opportunity to make sure that we are working toward accountability and transparency for all boards in the state of Maryland. But I think it's interesting that you brought up Frank Kelly, because his name was one of the names initially mentioned to me for, you know, his insurance contracts. But I learned from media that Frank Kelly, when he was a senator, was the leader responsible for privatizing UMMS to begin with. And so I'm not sure if he was on the board at that time, but it's interesting that he had a hand in the privatization, which actually set all the wheels in motion for non-transparency.
And the governor appoints the members of the board to the University of Maryland Medical System.
Yes.
Is it incumbent upon the governor to vet candidates that he's thinking about appointing to the board for this position? I mean, is this something, do you foresee that the governor will approach that particular obligation in a different way from now on?
I do, because actually he didn't have any prohibition on appointing people that had business interests or would do business with the board or were employed by companies that do business with the board. With all of this, I think that he'll take a different approach. And I also, so the bills, for the Speaker's bill requires, if it should it pass, and I think it will, requires that all nominees now go through, be approved by the Senate through the regular executive nominations procedure, and I think that is also going to be helpful.
And speaking of this issue, the governor weighed in last week in Annapolis.
Nobody should be serving on the board while having any kind of financial relationship with the hospital system. If somebody has the financial relationship with the hospital system, they shouldn't be on the board.
So he's pretty clear about how he feels about it now, to be sure. Put yourself on the other side of this, Senator. I mean, why do you think the University of Maryland Medical System would want to purchase $500,000 of children's books from Mayor Pugh or then Senator Pugh, because these books started being purchased when she was in the legislature? Why do you think that they would issue no-bid contracts to people who were on their board? Is it a matter of is it as innocent as the mayor contends, or some of these other board members contend, in that, you know, they offer services that are needed by the university system, and they are well equipped to deliver those services? So there's, you know, no harm, no foul.
I think it's highly political. I think that it's come out also that the board has donated or given grants to the inaugural committees of the mayor and the governor, and we don't know how many others throughout the years. And so I think the board is a political, it's basically operated as a political body to finance different campaign and public interest or of that of candidates that it needs to support. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's, I can't say I think it's wholly innocent, but I can say that most things in life are about relationships. And so I'm sure that the mayor's situation happened because of her relationship with board members and that they wanted to do something to support it. And then also the idea of healthy children's books, you know, that is appealing for any entity that wants to do some good for the city.
There's also relationships between individual members of the board contributing to Mayor Pugh's campaigns. She received some $200,000 in loans to her campaign from a few of the members, as well as more than $30,000 in actual contributions. And then she, in turn, with the Healthy Holly Incorporated, this company that she's started, which includes the books and I guess some other activities promoting fitness for kids, gave campaign contributions not only to her own campaign, but to others, to Johnny Olszewski in Baltimore County, and even to one of your campaigns. I mean, there's nothing illegal about that, right? Is there anything?
No, unfortunately, we have kind of loosey-goosey laws about LLCs donating to campaigns. So I don't know. It's possible that we didn't even, I can definitely tell you I didn't realize that. First of all, I probably didn't even know that it was a contribution because everything was happening so fast. But the point is, I definitely wouldn't have associated the name Healthy Holly with the mayor when I saw it. I just wouldn't have associated it. I wasn't aware of those books.
Sure, sure. Where does the bill stand now? And in terms of, do you expect that this will end up going to conference with Speaker Bush's bill? I mean, they are fast-tracking that one.
It's not filed as a cross-file, so I really don't know the plan. That's above my pay grade. I don't know. I'm told that both bills will be moved out of each house and attempted to be, there will be an attempt to reconcile them. And so I'm just hoping, I think there's a couple of things I'd like to still see in place that my bill does that his bill doesn't do, which is I would like to see, I like the idea of prohibiting the contracting by board members. And I think there's another thing, but I can't remember it right now.
Senator Jill Carter represents the 41st District in the Senate in Maryland. She serves on the Judicial Proceedings Committee and two other joint committees. Well, Senator, I appreciate the time, and we'll keep in touch about this.
Thanks so much.
Is the situation at the University of Maryland Medical System unique? What should nonprofit boards do to ensure that they're acting according to best practices when it comes to ethics and conflicts of interest and financial disclosures? We'll talk about that when Midday returns after a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, one of the central tenets of the recommendations made by the Kerwin Commission on Education Reform is the need for statewide universal pre-K programs. So tomorrow we'll take a look at some cities that have universal pre-K programs for 3- and 4-year-olds. How are they working? Who's enrolled in them? And what do they cost? Educating our littlest children and getting them ready for school, that's our focus tomorrow. If you've just joined us today, when it comes to situations like the scandal that's enveloping the University of Maryland Medical System Board of Directors, the question arises, do the actions of some board members and the administration of the system constitute malfeasance? Are they the result of ineffective board governance? How can a board do the work to advance the mission of their organization in an ethical way, free of any appearance of conflict of interest? To discuss that question, we turn now to Heather Iliff. She's the CEO of Maryland Nonprofits. That's an association of more than 1,000 nonprofit organizations. Maryland Nonprofits offers advice and training about best practices for how boards should operate. Heather Iliff, welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Tom. Delighted to be here.
And Doug Donovan joins us as well. He's a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. He's been covering the University of Maryland medical system story as it has evolved over the past week or so. Doug, good to see you, sir.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, listeners, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. So Heather Iliff, just as a person who studies boards and how they work and the way they should work, what was your reaction when you heard and read the stories in the Sun about what's going on at the University of Maryland Medical System?
Well, Maryland Nonprofits exist to help boards avoid exactly this kind of situation. And so my heart goes out to the people at UMS in having to sort through this mess. And a little part of me also makes me think, well, at least this gets the importance of ethics on the front page, because many boards of directors have a lot of other concerns on their minds, like raising money for the organization and approving routine items on their board agendas. And it's so important for them to be asking these questions and making sure they have the proper procedures in place.
So for a sort of normal, if there is such a thing, nonprofit organization, you're a 501c3. That's the part of the tax code that allows people to make contributions that are tax deductible. And it carries with it a certain modicum of the public trust. I mean, the tax system makes it advantageous for people to donate and support the work of the organizations. But what's the obligation of a nonprofit to get that status, to retain that status? And is the University of Maryland Medical System, obligated in exactly the same way? Because the board is a little bit different in that the governor appoints the members to this body. Does that make a difference one way or the other? Is the UMMS board different than the Symphony board or the board of the United Way or something like that?
Mm-hmm. So to take your first question first, for a normal board of a 501c3 nonprofit organization, they do have a lot of legal fiduciary duties vested in them. And although they're volunteers who take time out of their day to give back by being on a board, it is important for them to understand what those duties are. And most people don't learn about that in high school, or they don't learn about that in college. So it is incumbent on the nonprofit to educate their board members about those duties. We established the Standards for Excellence program that is now a national code of ethics and accountability for nonprofits that's more than 20 years old and is a well-tested set of benchmarks that require organizations to have a written conflict of interest policy. The IRS also asks but does not require organizations to have a conflict of interest policy. And as I understand from the Sun's reporting that the University of Maryland Medical System Board did say that they had the policy. So the next step in question is, are they following it? And I think for some large institutions, they might think that compliance is all delegated to the staff officers in an organization, and that when boards have top presidents of companies and elected officials on their board, that they must already be knowledgeable about all these rules. But really, everyone needs to have this kind of refresher regularly to make sure that they're following all those steps.
And Doug Donovan, the General Assembly is thinking about ways that they can exert more oversight to the University of Maryland Medical System, because there is no shortage of state money, taxpayer money, that goes directly to the UMMS system. We're not just talking about contributions from people. We're talking about taxpayer dollars. I mean, this is a big operation, and the state helps it out.
Yeah, it's a $4 billion a year revenue last year. And that sort of the context about why it's problematic that Senator Pugh, or then Senator Pugh, entered into this deal with the University of Maryland Medical System is that she sat on the Health Subcommittee of the Senate Finance Committee that oversees a lot of the funding that comes from the state. So at the same time, she's sitting in that powerful position. She's entering into a contract with the University of Maryland system. And it's interesting because, like, I'm always surprised that nonprofits fall into this ethical dilemma, you know, and it sort of jeopardizes all the good that they do when they could have just been transparent from the get-go. And in this situation, what's odd is, like, they reported the first gift to Kathy Pugh, Mayor Pugh, properly. They listed her name alongside the other inside board members who were getting deals. They listed the amount, $100,000, and they said it was for books. And then in the two subsequent tax filings, they reported it as grants. One was a grant to Healthy Holly LLC, which is her company, yet they never disclose anywhere in the document that Healthy Holly is Mayor Pugh's company. And then in the third time they disclosed it, it was a grant to the Baltimore City Public School System, the address of which they say is a typo, but it was the same address as the mayor's home for the school system. And the school system says they never received a grant from the University of Maryland Medical System. And then again, in that year, they never disclosed that she benefited from this deal because she's a board member. And all the tax experts I spoke to, including like the former head of the tax exempt division at the IRS, said that is just not good practice. You want to be transparent. You want to, because what they kept relying on was it wasn't over $100,000. It was exactly $100,000. Had it been over $100,000, they would have disclosed it. But they did disclose it when it was exactly $100,000 the first time. So there's a lot of questions that have not been answered. We've asked for board minutes. We've asked for the contracts themselves, you know, and everything that I saw in the American Hospital Association's like good governance for boards is that, you know, if the board is voting on a contract that benefits you as a board member, you need to leave the room. You know, I don't know if that's standard practice, but you shouldn't be in the room because that would influence the decision probably. And we have no idea if any of that happened with any of these deals. And they can say that these deals were good for the hospital at or below market value, but we won't know until they provide the documents.
And Heather Eiffel, when it comes to responsibility for this, the board, as I understand nonprofit boards, and I ran a small arts nonprofit for 35 years here in Baltimore, I reported to the board as the main employee, the executive, the artistic director of this arts organization. So they were my boss. And the executive committee in particular, you know, I was in very close contact with them about everything that was going on. So I didn't share every little thing with the entire board, but I certainly shared it with the president and with the executive committee. In this instance, Robert Krenchik, who is now on a leave of absence, he's paid $4.2 million a year. This is a huge job. Was it his responsibility to make sure that everybody on the board understood that these contracts were being entered into and with whom they were being entered into? Is it the responsibility of the executive committee or the chair of the board? Where does it break down in terms of who should have been on top of this and evidently wasn't?
So the bottom line is the board of directors itself is the responsible body to ensure that the organization is carrying out its legal and fiduciary duties. The board may delegate to the CEO any manner of duties that it sees appropriate. And obviously, in a huge institution like that with a high-powered CEO, it would most likely be part of their job description to make sure all those legal compliance pieces are in place. Having said that, making sure that these kinds of conversations happen on the board agenda. And as Doug rightfully pointed out, that if they're making a decision about an interested party transaction, as they would, the IRS would call it, that the interested party would leave the room while that conversation is happening about whether it is advantageous for the organization to enter into that deal.
So given that bit of best practices, is it then not unheard of for interested parties to, in fact, get contracts with the nonprofits on whose boards they serve? Is it also best practice that it just never happened? The governor is basically saying this should never happen. If you're on the board of UMMS, you should be there because you're altruistically inclined to help the mission of this organization, and your business is going to have to go someplace else. I mean, where is the line there? How do you decide that an interested party is ever it's ever okay for that person to be involved?
Mm-hmm. So the best practice is related to two things. One, that the organization have a policy around those kinds of conflicts and follows their policy. And also, they have a legal fiduciary duty, according to the national law and according to the IRS, a duty of loyalty to the organization. And part of that duty of loyalty is to avoid conflicts of interest. But it does not outright prohibit conflicts of interest. And so they should be rare, although in small communities, they do come up a lot. So if there are not a lot of lawyers or accountants in a given area, it may be more likely in a rural community, for example, that a nonprofit may do more business with their directors and have to scrutinize that appropriately.
Let's go to the phones to Angela in Mount Vernon. Angela, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Oh, my pleasure. As I indicated to the call screener, I'm in the process with six other people in establishing a nonprofit. We all have impaired vision or are blind, and we've met a couple of times to establish our bylaws. We're all lay people, and one of the things that we know is that if you have any kind of individual business, something that would indicate conflict of interest, it's just not an issue. You don't bring your personal endeavors into the functioning of your nonprofit. We actually went to a information session hosted at the library, and the information was given by Maryland Nonprofit. It was awesome. And you know, you have a separate document indicating what constitutes conflict of interest, and I'm just not understanding how this could have gone on for so long. And if it's a matter of institutions that are bigger, and where the monetary gain is bigger, where people kind of turn their head and it's overlooked. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that call, Angela, and good luck with your new nonprofit. And Doug Donovan, there are a lot of people who say, well, gosh, the University of Maryland Medical System seemed to think that it was really important to have this contract, for example, with Mayor Pugh, who, as you mentioned, was at the time on the Senate Finance Committee, headed the Health Subcommittee. $500,000 over a period of 6 or 7 years seems to be an awful lot of money for one vote on one committee. How does that work? I mean, it seemed somebody thought it was in the best interest of the system to do this. And you got to think that they thought of it as something more than just giving a bunch of nice books to kids.
Yeah, from their perspective, they saw it as, you know, dovetailing with their mission to promote health, a healthy community. You know, she's a representative of the community, and she had these books, and so they decided they're going to buy them and distribute them to the schools. But then, you know, when you check out their story, it's pretty hard to find the books in the schools, and there's about 9,000 of them sitting in boxes in a warehouse, and the school system says they never actually received a grant necessarily from UMMS. So there are a lot of questions. It looks like, yeah, it might dovetail with your mission, but how did you go about it? Did the CEO just strike this deal on his own in a personal conversation with the Mayor Pugh, Senator Pugh at the time? And, you know, there's a big difference, I think, between these contracts with, say, Kelly Insurance and Pugh. Like, Kelly has been in the business for decades. They're providing a service that you can actually, you know, point to. Mayor Pugh is not necessarily a well-known author of any sort, certainly not a well-known children's author. That's not to diminish her ability to write a book, but at least you have a track record with Kelly, who had worked at several of the hospitals prior to the University of Maryland Medical System buying those hospitals. Whereas Mayor Pugh, she wasn't known for writing her book. She had written a book of poetry before that. So to come out of the blue with children's 100,000 copies of
a children's book. Children's author would be, you know,
it'd be a dream.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it'd be a huge, yeah, it'd be a great achievement.
And we should say that the scale of, for example, Mr. Kelly's financial profit from this and Mayor Pugh's is very different. I mean, Mr. Kelly's firm got some $30 million over, you know, a period of many years. And as you say, have provided that service not just to the UMMS system, but also to other hospitals in the area. Heather Ifill, what about the contention that if a board member wouldn't have the opportunity to present his or her business to the system for consideration, whether it's a bid contract or a no bid contract, that would greatly impede the system's capacity to attract good board members, because, you know, these board members, I guess, are expected to make personal contributions to the system, right? That's part of the deal. When you're on the board, you're expected to make a pretty substantial contribution to this nonprofit cause, the cause of healthcare. If you can't get people of means to do that without, you know, dangling the carrot, if you will, of the possibility of their businesses being able to profit, does that put you at a disadvantage?
So I think the general idea is that the money should be flowing from the board members to the organization and not the other way around. And that's what we want to see, board members who are willing to step up and lead as part of their civic duty and out of a charitable mindset. Board members receive many benefits in being on especially large institution prestigious boards, being able to build relationships with the other board members, build relationships with people in the community, the prestige that being on the board affords them. If you look at the top 50 CEOs and you look at the daily records, business people who get recognized, hardly anyone ever gets recognized without very significant public service, including serving on nonprofit boards. Having said that, conflict of interest is an area that is full of a lot of nuance, and the idea of prohibiting contracts as its own piece, that's only one part of an overall conflict of interest policy that would be much more comprehensive and include many other ways that board members might benefit from their board service through. So my concern is that you want disclosing your conflicts of interest to be a matter of routine for your board of directors. I worry a little bit about making those kinds of conflicts illegal could make this a more charged and dicey environment in the board if, say, someone's child is being served by the institution or other things where people get involved with the institution in other ways that could be a perceived conflict. And you want to make sure those get disclosed routinely and people aren't worried about sanctions.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because Governor Hogan himself was a patient at the University of Maryland Hospital and was cured of cancer, God bless him. And so, you know, here he is saying, wait a minute, the board's not running the way it should run. But he himself had a very personal vested interest in the, you know, the efficacy of the treatment, at least. So we're going to take a little bit break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about this with Heather Iliff. She's the CEO of Maryland Nonprofits, and Doug Donovan. He's a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle at @MiddayWYPR. So before we go to our break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence during the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 62 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Last week, police reported 6 people were victims of homicide in our city, and so far, the names of 3 of those victims have been released. They are DeAndre Johnson, age 25, Ryan Brunson, age 27, and Markel Hendricks. He was 16 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
We had a very productive meeting with the governor and the speaker, and I'm sorry, the Senate president, and the speaker had given his information to his chief of staff to share with us. They're quite concerned, as we understand, as we are too, about all that's transpired. They had some very strong but positive views on what should happen next. We have a board meeting tomorrow morning to follow up on the actions that I took yesterday regarding the resignation of 3 board members and a leave of absence, voluntary leave of absence of the other 4. The board tomorrow will discuss in detail what we do to fix this going forward and make sure things like this don't happen again.
That's Stephen Birch. He is the chair of the board of the University of Maryland Medical System. Again, that's a voluntary position. He doesn't get paid to be on the board. He was speaking last Wednesday after a meeting with the governor, with Mike Miller, the Senate president, and a representative of Speaker Mike Bush. And the board meeting that Mr. Birch referred to in that clip that was held the next day resulted in the CEO of the UMMS enterprise, Robert Krenchik, being put on a leave of absence. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, the University of Maryland medical system has been rocked by allegations of self-dealing and conflict of interest. A bill in the Maryland House of Delegates, as well as one in the Maryland Senate, are making their way through the legislative process. Governor Larry Hogan, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Mike Bush. And by the way, Mike Bush himself serves on the board of the University of Maryland Medical Center System. They have all vowed to address the problems at UMMS with legislation in this session, which ends in just a few weeks. UMMS isn't the only hospital system facing allegations of conflict of interest. MedStar Health, which is based in Howard County, has agreed to pay $35 million in penalties emanating from a kickback scheme with a now defunct cardiology practice. So the allegations are that this practice took kickbacks from Union Memorial and Franklin Square hospitals to assign referrals for cardiovascular procedures. And there's even some question as to whether or not some of those procedures were necessary. My guests today are Doug Donovan of the Baltimore Sun and Heather Iliff. She's the CEO of Maryland Nonprofits. That's an association of organizations who work on behalf of a wide variety of social and civic causes. Our number here at Midday, 410-662 888-382-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR. So Doug Donovan, as they say in the musical theater, this story has gotten curiouser and curiouser as it's gone on. You alluded before the break to some 9,000 copies of the book that were discovered in a warehouse. But it's not at all clear where some of the other books are. Mayor Pugh has been adamant in saying that she reported the profits from this enterprise on her tax form. However, she doesn't seem to be able to produce receipts or bills of lading for the interaction. So one wonders how you report that kind of stuff on your taxes if you don't have receipts for what you've sold. Is it possible that not only did she take money from the University of Maryland Medical System, but she never even produced some of the books?
Well, it's only possible in that we don't know because we haven't seen any evidence yet. There's no evidence of 100,000 books being printed and distributed. We only really know what we've been told from the school system is that, you know, 5 years ago they remember books coming in and there's still 9,000 of them sitting in this warehouse. You know, we sent out reporters to look at daycares and call daycare associations and other places to see if they have copies of the books, gone to bookstores looking for them. They're hard to get on Amazon, so they're not readily available. And, you know, if you want books, I think the phone number on the book is, you know, tied to somebody, obviously, who's connected to the campaign. And there's just too many questions out there about, you know, how this deal went down. And it's a matter of transparency. And if you don't produce the information, people are going to assume the worst. And in this case, you know, we don't know how they went about approving these contracts. They said they didn't even have a contract. The medical system said they did not have a contract with Pugh. So what does that mean? There's got to be paperwork. There's got to be checks cut. The mayor says she's giving back $100,000. So there's a way to trace that money as well. You know, how did she give it back? Did she write a check to them? And if so, what was the account? And then they can go from there.
And of course, there have been a couple of different reasons that she's returning that money. She says everything was on the up and up, but this last shipment of books wasn't ever actually printed. And at one point she told, I guess, WBAL television that it was because the people she was dealing with were ill, they had a medical problem, and another, she told the Baltimore Brew a different story. So there's a little bit of lack of clarity about even the reason that $100,000 can go back to the University of Maryland system.
Yeah, lack of clarity is like the death knell for this type of thing. I mean, people are just going to assume something untoward is happening. And I think that's why, like, Heather's group provides these best practices for boards to follow. It's, you know, from an outsider's perspective, from, you know, a layperson's perspective, it seems pretty simplistic. You know, if you serve on the board, you should disclose any conflicts. You should, you know, leave the room when they vote on a contract. And most of them have disclosed it. The thing with Mayor Pugh is we were only able to find two of the disclosures that she filed with. She said she filed 4 years worth of disclosures with the Healthcare Services Cost Commission, which is this relatively obscure commission that maintains these records. You know, anybody who's a reporter knows how to obtain financial disclosure forms. But even to all of us, this was like, oh, this commission collects these forms. And you look at the other ones like the Kelly Group, they filed year after year after year. And the disclosures were also on the IRS forms year after year, very boilerplate. Only Mayor Pugh's changes with time, you know, from paying her directly $100,000 to having a grant to Healthy Holly to then having a grant to the Baltimore Public School System. Meanwhile, all the other insider deals that were being reported to the IRS were all boilerplate year after year mm-hmm. after year. Numbers change, but, you know, to me, that's transparency. But with the Mayor Pugh deal, there's this big question of how did it begin and why was it categorized the way it was.
And Heather Iliff, there is a distinction, is there not, between board members who perhaps had a contractual relationship with their nonprofit prior to their joining the board. It's not unusual, is it, for nonprofits to, when they're looking for people to join their board, to perhaps go to the people that they do business with, because They know that they know those people and the people know them, and they're giving these organizations, whether it be a bank maybe or a, you know, a printer or something, you know, they're giving them business. It wouldn't be unusual for a nonprofit like the Science Center or the Aquarium or the Baltimore Museum of Art to go to those vendors and say, hey, you know, you've got a relationship with us. Would you like to also join the board, or would you like to have a person from your company join the board? Is that considered on the up and up? I mean, does the timing of this matter, whether or not you got the contract prior to joining the board or after?
So I think in terms of best practices that boards need to be paying attention to, we often in our training ask, how would this look if it ended up on the cover of the Baltimore Sun? And so you're not just looking at the time frames and whether forms were filed. You're wanting to think about, what are the optics of this? How will this impact the image of our organization? And I think in general, organizations should be cautious. So when you, Doug mentioned several of the disclosures on the Form 990, is the tax form that nonprofits need to fill out. They need to report any transactions with related parties. So those could be on the board. They could also be on the staff of the organization. And why that's important is because, as you mentioned earlier, Tom, they're charitable assets that are held by the organization. And you want to make sure that no one is making a profit off of a charity. That's why we're called nonprofit. And so the other part of the routine disclosures that you'll see was that it was at or below market rate. And if a nonprofit fails to be able to document that, or if it can be documented the contrary, that they paid more than market rate, then that additional amount that was paid to that interested party is subject to sanction by the IRS, is taxable, and is subject to penalty. So those kinds of transactions are already, I don't know if illegal is the right word, but subject to sanction under the IRS and subject to a lot of sunshine disclosure laws.
We have an email from Julie in Hamden. She serves on the board of the Hamden Community Council, and she says there's been a significant focus on the mayor and other, board members receiving money for products and services, which is certainly justified. But the other reason a board member shouldn't have undisclosed conflicts or financial relationships is because a person who's receiving financial benefit as a board member is less likely to be able to hold the organization's leadership accountable when, for example, the hospital does something heinous like put a mentally ill patient out on the streets in the middle of winter. I mean, if they're good for business, well, Doug Donovan, you know, if the university system is good for business, are you going to be inclined to call them out when they make a mistake?
Exactly. I mean, that's where these conflicts come in. And that's why they're so important to know what they are in advance. And it is surprising and telling that Speaker Bush serves on the board and he says that he was unaware of these contracts. That's very concerning that someone of his stature, who appeared on the cover of the University of Maryland Medical System annual report just last year, was unaware that some of these big contracts were entered into, despite, you know, like for the Kelly one, it was disclosed properly and whatnot. But just to not have Speaker Bush know about it is very worrisome.
Yeah, and Heather, the difference between the University of Maryland Medical System, which has this sort of funky history with the state of Maryland and a relationship with the state, it's different than Johns Hopkins Hospital or, you know, MedStar Health or some of the other health systems, or certainly any of the other nonprofit boards in town. But the general best practices isn't limited to, you know, arts organizations or social service organizations or hospitals or something. I mean, the best practices pertain to everybody, right?
That's right. All boards of any charitable organization, and there are a number, not just hospitals, but there are a number of other kinds of nonprofits that we would consider quasi-governmental. And there are other nonprofits that receive millions of dollars in government funding. So we do take these responsibilities very seriously when we join a board of directors. And if you are joining a board, or you're the chair of a board, or you're an executive director reporting to a board, you're going to want to be attentive to these issues.
Heather Iliff is the CEO of Maryland Nonprofits. Doug Donovan's an investigative reporter for the Baltimore Sun. I appreciate both of you coming by. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about the costs and benefits of universal pre-K. Most people say they're all for it, but when a lot of folks hear what it costs, they become decidedly less enthusiastic. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. We want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Here and Now is coming up next after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your listening. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.